from KQED.
From KQED News, I'm Kat Snow. Some of the West's famous composers may have coped with mental illness through music. Schumann, Tchaikovsky, and Beethoven all might have suffered from mental illness. Dr. Richard Kogan has studied the biographies of musical legends like these to better understand how they used music to quiet and channel internal chaos. Kogan is a psychiatrist at Cornell University and a renowned concert pianist. He recently spoke at the TEDMED conference in Palm Springs. Kogan told KQED's Leslie McClurg that music used to be a more integral part of healing.
The ancient Greeks designated Apollo as the god of both medicine and music. Many primitive cultures, in many of them, the roles of physician and musician were played by the same person. You'd have the shaman who would sometimes use medical instruments, sometimes use musical instruments. They just wanted to heal. Now, over time, music and medicine have drifted apart. Both music and medicine have become much more specialized. And something I think has probably been gained by the increase in specialization, but there's a concern that much has been lost. And as medicine becomes, and clearly it has become increasingly pharmacologically and technologically driven, I really want the audience to just be aware of music's extraordinary capacity to heal. It should not be lost. It should still be within the domain or purview of what we as healthcare professionals are trying to accomplish.
And last night when you opened your talk, you started with the story of a young boy named George Gershwin who was sort of fidgety and nervous, anxious, probably had ADHD, and then suddenly finds music at the age of 10 or hears music at the age of 10 and goes on, as many people know, to be one of the world's greatest pianists and composers. And at the end you said, you know, music didn't just heal him, it made him better than well. What did you mean there?
I'm convinced that if, you know, modern-day psychiatrists examining him would for sure give him a diagnosis of conduct disorder, might diagnose him, as you said, with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and might have started him on one of the psychostimulant medications like Adderall or Ritalin. Those medications didn't exist during his lifetime. He still made a remarkable recovery, grew up in a home that was almost completely without music, but at age 10, he heard a classmate's violin recital, was utterly transfixed by the sounds of the violin. On the spot, he decided he's going to devote his life to the study of music. And once he started, all of the bad behavior, the fist fights, the stealing, that pretty much vanished. It was as if music provided a sense of order, I think. He retained the hyperactivity for the rest of his life, but he no longer had impulse control problems and attention deficit problems. His attention was excellent, so, you know, as he matured. His exposure to music unlocked something that none of his early school teachers or anybody in his family saw, which was he had an extraordinary creative potential, and music was the way it was expressed. But I don't think he would have had access to any of that had he not been introduced to music.
How did his mental illness or the way his brain worked influence his work or the way his music sounded?
He had throughout his life a remarkable ability to extract music out of what others would have considered to be merely noise. I told the story last night's program about how he was on a train ride from New York to Boston, listened to the sounds of the train, you know, the whoosh, the steam engine, the clickety-clack of the train along the tracks. In listening to these sounds, he heard almost the entire construction of Rhapsody in Blue in his head.
And you played this for audiences at TEDMED.
Years later, he took a trip to Paris. The sounds of the Parisian taxi horns were different from taxi horns used to hearing in New York. He used those Parisian taxi horns as a foundational sound for his great symphonic masterpiece, An American in Paris.
And this is the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And as a psychiatrist, do you use music in your sessions with patients?
I think music is an enormously underutilized modality of healing. Music provides so much of what psychiatrists and actually all physicians are looking to do. Music can You know, it can soothe anxiety, it can lift spirits, it can reduce pain. And I think we all intuitively know that music makes us feel better. There are researchers who are doing impressive work now in demonstrating scientifically exactly what music does. And I think when the results are rolling, I predict there's going to be an explosion in the use of music as a modality of healing.
Do you ever worry that your work or these biographies revealing this information may influence how patients or even clinicians address mental illness or treat it for fear of hindering creative brilliance?
I think that that's one of the issues that clinicians have to confront. It's extremely important not to over-romanticize mental illness. Most people who are depressed are too paralyzed to write a symphony. Most people who are psychotic are too disorganized to put together anything coherent. But for bipolar disorder, manic depressive illness, the hypomanic state, the elevated mood state, there are features of it that are just conducive to creative achievement. There's increased energy, sharpened imagination, decreased need for sleep. Many of these individuals are reluctant to comply with treatment recommendations because they don't want to give up the creative highs associated with their mania. Unfortunately, the state tends to be unstable and often rather destructive. So I think the best clinicians appreciate the potential advantages of mental illness and try to work with it to ultimately enhance creativity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leslie.
That was psychiatrist and pianist Richard Kogan. I'm Leslie McClurg, KQED News.
Support for KQED Science is provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation, Hope Lab, and the Dirk and Charlene Capsonel Foundation.